Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, November 29th, 2013. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Cynthia Ganatra.
Hello.
Hey, Cynthia. Jackie, Jenny, Tim, and Alyssa are all away today. It's just us two here. Welcome, everyone. Today we present you a show for the dogs. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage the movement toward a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM, and at cooperadio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. For our first interview today on our show for the dogs, we have Eva Demianowicz with us. She is a companion animal campaigner for the Humane Society International, and she will be speaking to us on the issue of puppy mills, which is actually quite a big industry here in Canada. Puppy mills are basically factory farms for dogs, that is, breeding facilities where as many dogs as possible are produced in order to sell them at maximum profit to people looking for companion animals with little regard for their welfare. Eva was recently involved in a rescue of over 100 dogs from a puppy mill in Quebec, and she will be speaking to us about that as well. And for our feature interview, we have animal activist Ashley Fruno on the show with us. Ashley is originally here from Vancouver, but now lives in Manila in the Philippines, where she dedicates her life to working for the animals. In the aftermath of the terrible Typhoon Haiyan that destroyed lives in the Philippines 3 weeks ago, we'll speak to her to get her personal insights as to what the situation is like there for the animals right now. Ashley has also been volunteering many of her resources for the past 3 years to provide assistance to a pack of 200 dogs in an impoverished area of Pasay City in the Philippines. And we'll talk to her about this work as well, which she calls the Pasay Pup Project. That interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, so please do stay tuned. So, last week, Animal Voices went to the movies. Alyssa, Jackie, and I went to see the film called Free Birds, which, as you probably, people listening here, probably familiar with it because it's in the mainstream theaters right now all over North America. And you haven't seen it yet, have you, Cynthia?
No, I haven't.
I think you were away last week, so you weren't able to join us. But what this film is about, we are very interested in seeing it, especially as an Animal Voices field trip, because it's very applicable to animal rights, or one might think. And it's quite amazing that this film got made, I think. What this mainstream animated children's film is about, it's about a turkey named Reggie and his friend, whose name I can't remember. It's played by Owen Wilson is Reggie, and Woody Harrelson is his friend who goes on this adventure with him. And Reggie realizes that, hey, you know, it's Thanksgiving and they are actually fattening us up here on this turkey farm to kill us and eat us. And all the other turkeys are totally oblivious to this news when he tries to tell them about it. And they're just all, the film depicts the other turkeys being kind of dumb creatures. And even Reggie says turkeys are dumb, which isn't too good for the turkeys. I don't think they're dumb personally, the ones I've known. But anyways, none of them believe him. But Reggie knows and his friend knows. And they go back in time in a time machine that just happens to be there. And they go back to 1612-ish around there where the first Thanksgiving was named apparently in history with the Pilgrims. And what they do is they try to convince the Pilgrims to take turkey off the plate forever. And so changing that course of time is going to change it for the future for all the turkeys who will thus be spared their lives. And can you imagine? I think I heard a statistic yesterday that I think my friend said it's 500,000 turkeys that, it was a different statistic. Anyways, it's many thousands of turkeys that are killed every Thanksgiving. And this weekend actually happens to be the Thanksgiving in the United States. So happy Thanksgiving, everyone, as we call it here at Animal Voices. So that's what this film is about, it's about getting turkeys off the plate for Thanksgiving so that they're not harmed and killed. And it's a very blatant message. This is a children's film. And I just, like, what are your thoughts about that, Cynthia? I'm just blown away that this film got made. Like, who's out there saying, let's make a film that talks about not eating animals or at least turkeys?
I think it's amazing that it got made. Did the turkeys actually get taken off the plate then? Did they win that? Okay.
They did. Well, they don't show what happens in the future because they're still back in time when it ends. But maybe we'll get to that later because people have to eat something, right? So they're not eating turkey, but they're eating something else. But I just think that's quite amazing. There was an article in Slate Magazine, which is an online magazine, several weeks ago, which I found really interesting. This person, Dan Coy, he's saying that he believes in being vegetarian. He knows he should, but he just doesn't have the self-discipline to do it himself. And what he says, though, is he says, I love Thanksgiving, but there are a lot of people to please and a lot of food to cook, and two loudly protesting children do not easily fit into that. He's talking about what he thinks his children. He thinks that now all the children in the world are not going to want to eat Reggie on their, they're not going to want to see this dead turkey carcass, which is very clearly depicted in the film. Like, this is what this is, people. We're not hiding it here. This is a dead turkey, and this is your beloved friend Reggie from the film, and this film is for kids. I think it's planting a seed in their minds, and they're definitely going to be saying something about this.
I think it's great. It's actually telling children the truth. Oftentimes we hide it. I remember when my sister first found out that lamb chop from Lamb Chop's Play Along was the same lamb chop she was eating, and she was horrified. And I remember her not eating lamb chops for a really long time.
I remember Lamb Chop. He was a beautiful, cute little lamb. So I want to say that this definitely is not, this film is going in the right direction, but it's definitely not an animal rights film. As I was alluding to earlier, the alternative that they suggest has big product placement, actually, is Reggie brings cheese pizza, copious amounts of cheese pizza from Chuck E. Cheese to replace the turkey, and some anchovies accidentally fall onto one of the pizzas too. So
it's pescatarian.
Voila, anchovy pizza is invented then. And so I guess it's okay to kill cows and fishes, but at least the turkeys are safe. So while it's not an animal rights film, I am really glad that this film got made. It's really cute. It's funny. It's a first for us. And I really think that we are on the cusp of something here in 2013 where veganism, that word is out everywhere. And when films like this get put into the mainstream media, it's a step in the right direction for sure.
Definitely. And something else in the mainstream media is that apparently Al Gore has gone vegan. We don't know too much more. We just know in the news that Al Gore has gone vegan. We don't know when, but possibly if he went this month would have been great because it's World Vegan Month. So I thought I would share some tips and resources on how to transition to a vegan diet for Al Gore and for other people who are now transitioning to a vegan diet. These are some tips that have helped me, and I'm also a nutritionist, so I have a few nutrition tips. So my first tip is not a nutrition one, but I think it's one of the most important, which is find some vegan friends or go vegan with a partner. Unfortunately, we still live in a very omnivorous world, so having support is key. If you live like in a city like Vancouver, you can join meetup groups. There's a Vancouver Vegans Facebook page. And even if you're somewhere rural, you can always join any kind of Facebook group. It's a good way to be connected with other vegans and be supported. And the second one, when it comes to nutrition, I always suggest eating a whole plant-based diet, including nutrient-dense foods. So adding nutrient-dense foods such as kale, hemp, chia, that'd be cool if there was chimp. Hemp, chia, lentils, and quinoa to replace any fats or proteins you may have gotten from your animal-based foods. And some good websites for nutrition info is PCRM.org. That is the website for the Physicians Council of Responsible Medicine. They have lots of good information to keep you healthy, including recipes. And then also you can get a great book, of course, The Vegan Bible, is Becoming Vegan by Brenda Davis and Vizanto, who we had on the show recently. And then another great tip for me is to find vegan versions of your favorite food. I transitioned from vegetarian to vegan, and my favorite food was mac and cheese. And I know it's a big comfort food. I shouldn't probably say that as a nutritionist. That's one of my favorite things. But now I have a vegan version, which I think is a million times better than the original cheese version that I had. So that with something that
it's
really
so true. It is better, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Perfect. And so just a couple more quick things. Supplementation. The only vitamin that may be lacking in a healthy vegan diet is B12. So make sure you're getting enough B12, Al Gore. So get your fortified foods or take your supplement. And last thing is maintenance. So watch documentaries and videos that remind you while you're vegan. For health, you can watch Forks Over Knives. For animals, you can watch Earthlings or Ghosts in Our Machine. And I really suggest Al Gore, if he hasn't seen it already, he should watch Meet the Truth, which is the second part of, the animal rights version of Inconvenient Truth.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
Welcome back to Animal Voices. I'm going to go over some events now. So today is Fur Free Friday. That is Friday, November 29th. And there's a fur protest from 2 to 4 at Brooklyn Clothing. Join Vancouver Animal Defense League's campaign against Brooklyn Clothing to go fur free. The store sells fur trim of coyotes and raccoon dogs who were profoundly abused and killed. So every Friday and Saturday, there are protests outside Brooklyn Clothing. As I mentioned today, it's from 2 to 4. And tomorrow it's from 11 to 1. And they meet at the Blends Coffee on 508. Davie Street in Vancouver, and they walk together as a group to Brooklyn Clothing. So you can check out the Vancouver Animal Defense League's Facebook for more info. And then tomorrow, which is Saturday, November 30th, there's a Whole Foods leafletting outside Whole Foods at 2 p.m. on Cambie Street in Vancouver, which is 510 West 8th Avenue and Cambie. So the Whole Foods on Cambie. And Whole Foods, the reason for the protest is because Whole Foods has been proudly displaying misleading advertising about the humane ways they treat animals whose secretions and flesh they sell. The average consumer takes the face value without doing research and feels like they've done the animal and themselves a favor. It takes time to shed the truth about what humane meat really means in terms of marketing for the animals. So they plan to hand out leaflets outside Whole Foods, and it's actually being organized by Jackie and Alyssa, who are two co-hosts on Animal Voices. So if you want more information, you can actually contact us directly at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. I wish I was able to go, but unfortunately I'm not. I think it's a great, great initiative, especially with all the happy meat myth that goes on at Whole Foods. Also this weekend, it's a jam-packed weekend here in Vancouver for leafletting and protesting. Liberation BC presents Santa Claus Parade leafletting on Sunday, December 1st from 12:30 to 1:30. Join Liberation BC for holiday outreach, at the Santa Claus Parade. They'll be distributing turkey leaflets with holiday recipes to parade goers as they arrive. Of course, these holiday recipes are vegan. Every year, this is one of the most successful leafletting events, and you can help. They'll provide leaflets, so all you need to do is bring yourself, but dress warmly. And if you're interested or have any questions, you can email marychris@liberationbc.org.
And I'll be playing in the Santa Claus parade if you want to see a really good marching band. We're number 41. Watch out for us.
Oh, awesome. Perfect. And then Nice Shoes is once again holding a vegan bake sale to benefit Liberation BC. This will be on December 8th from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Nice Shoes in Vancouver, which is our vegan shoe shop, 3568 Fraser Street. The proceeds of the bake sale will go towards ongoing research for the dairy campaign and assist them in continuing to do vegan research. Outreach. If you're able to donate baked goods or any vegan goodies for the sale, please email info@niceshoes.ca. And if you have any animal-friendly events that you'd like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thank you for that, Cynthia. For our first interview today, we have Eva Demianovich on the show, who is a companion animal animal campaigner for the nonprofit organization Humane Society International, and she works for HSI on issues here in Canada concerning puppy mills, that is, the breeding and raising of puppies in substandard conditions for sale in pet stores, on the internet, and through brokers. Eva is here today to inform us about the problems of this industry and to tell us about a recent puppy mill rescue that HSI conducted in September. Hi, Eva, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, and thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for coming on the show today to talk to us about puppy mills. This is a topic that I have wanted to cover for quite some time now. There's so many questions I want to ask. But to start, can you give our listeners a briefing on exactly what a puppy mill is and how this system factors into the industry of selling companion animals to consumers?
Sure. So one thing that I'd like to remind people, first of all, is that the term puppy mill is not a legal term. So there are different definitions, and it's open to interpretation. So depending on who you talk to, you may have different opinions on what a puppy mill is exactly. However, most animal welfare organizations would agree that this is a term to describe large-scale breeding facilities. So we're talking about very large numbers of animals kept in one facility for breeding. It could be 50, 100, 250, could be even more than that. HSI Canada did a raid in 2011 in a breeding facility where 525 animals were kept in one place, and we are talking about very little staff taking care of these animals, so you can imagine the conditions in which they were living. So the main objective of puppy mills, of these businesses, is to obviously make profit, and this is achieved at the expense of animal welfare. We will usually see animals crowded in wire cages. There will be little access to food and water, lack of veterinarian care, and sanitary living conditions. All the things that we think about puppy mills. So these places exist because certainly there is laws and enforcement that are very limited, but they also exist because there is a strong demand for the product, which is the puppies from these places. The puppies will be sold through different channels of distribution, and usually people are not aware that they're contributing to the system of puppy mills by buying these puppies. So they will be sold in pet stores. They will be sold to pet stores via a broker sometimes. In the past, ads in newspapers were used. Now we see more often ads on the internet. So selling directly to the customer. In these cases, the buyer has no access to the breeding premises. They will meet the seller maybe in a parking lot or in the house. So they will not see the parents of the animal or where the puppy was actually born. And they will fall in love with that puppy or the photo of the puppy and will buy her or him without realizing that they're encouraging this business.
Can you talk about the problems that are associated with the animal welfare aspects of puppy mills, and are these concerns that are common in this industry?
So we see often the same conditions from one puppy mill to another. Some can be really worse than others, but they have similarities among them. So like I said, large numbers of breeding animals, hundreds of animals, multiple breeds also. And you will see breeds that are very popular, the ones that you see in pet stores, the ones that you see often in families, like Chihuahuas, Shih Tzus, Yorkies, these types of breeds. The conditions inside are always terrible, so overcrowded cages. They often use wire cages without floors, so the feces can go through the holes. So there's limited cleaning involved of the cages. The cages are stacked up in small spaces. The idea is to keep as many breeding animals as possible. So it's very unsanitary, obviously. The smell is often unbearable. This is the first thing that we notice when we enter these places, is how bad they smell and the fact that these animals live in these conditions all their lives. So obviously there is no veterinarian care. So we often see animals that are sick. We can see eye and skin infections, matted fur. There's also the whole psychological aspect of problems in puppy mills. So the behavioral issues of the animals, and this is specific to the parents. So the breeding animals, they have little human contact. They are terrified, scared. They've never been outside. They've never actually been socialized, so they're scared of everything. And they're very shut down animals when we arrive and rescue them. The animals are bred over and over, as often as possible, basically. So at each cycle, the mothers are often worn out at the age of 4 to 6 years old. They become tired of the pregnancies, basically. But it's not only the parents that are affected by this. The puppies can get sick, too. And mainly the reason is that there is absolutely no attention given to genetic issues or illnesses. The animals will be bred as long as they correspond to some breed. And as long as the mother is a good producer, she will be bred. So there is absolutely no follow-up on, you know, the illnesses that may come from her litters or genetic issues. And this is something that an ethical breeder would never do. But puppy mill operators do not really care about the after effect of the owner that buys the puppy.
Well, I want to talk about what laws exist here in Canada regarding mm-hmm. welfare standards for dogs being raised in these puppy mill facilities. What you're talking about here seems pretty atrocious. Mm-hmm. What do we have in place in our government to monitor or stop this kind of action?
Yeah, well, we have three levels of laws in Canada. So we have municipal laws, provincial laws, and federal laws. The federal laws address animal cruelty. They're very hard to apply. However, they are very old laws, and it has to be an extreme case of cruelty in order to be able to prosecute someone under the criminal code, the federal law. So the animals have to be dying of starvation or dehydration, and there must be like a clear intention of cruelty to actually use these laws. Usually for puppy mills, which are breeding facilities, we will go with provincial laws. They are much more adapt to these situations because you don't actually have to witness extreme conditions of animal cruelty to use provincial laws, but animal neglect will be sufficient to actually charge someone. So provincial laws are the most laws that have the most impact to address the problem of puppy mills. Our campaign focuses on Quebec, the province of Quebec, because there's been a history of puppy mills here in this province, and it affects the entire country because there's a lot of breeding places here that ship animals across Canada from Quebec that come from these places, and we find that they are actually shipped to other provinces. So I would say that provincial laws are the most important when it comes to puppy mills, but we also have municipal laws. So each municipality can actually implement or adopt bylaws that will have some sort of impact on puppy mills. We've seen municipalities banning the sales of puppies in pet stores, for example, and this is a good way to close or shut down a channel of distribution for puppy mills. And I know that in Richmond in BC was the first municipality to actually pass that bylaw, and we've seen other municipalities in Canada do it afterwards. But there's some initiative that can be taken on a municipal level for sure.
So HSI conducted a rescue 2 months ago where over 100 dogs were seized from a large-scale puppy mill operation in Montreal. Mm-hmm. What were the circumstances leading to this rescue, and can you describe the conditions that the dogs were in when you found them?
So usually before rescue happens, there's been multiple inspections, investigations of a place.
And that's by HSI, right?
It's the authorities. The provincial authorities have to actually be mandated by the government to go inside a place to ask for a warrant. So it's usually not nonprofit group that will do that, but really authorities from the government or mandated inspectors from the government, and they're there with often the police also. So they start an inspection process and an investigation. They will collect evidence. They will first... after first inspections, it's really a case of seizing the animals. What will happen often is an infraction report. The owners will get fines. They will receive recommendation on how to improve the conditions. And if this doesn't work, then what happens is that a rescue takes place. However, if the animals are really in danger, we're talking about animals that are, you know, starving or the conditions, really atrocious conditions. After the first inspection, there's always a possibility to do a raid, but what I've seen until now is multiple inspections that lead eventually, after months or years, to a rescue. And what we do, HSI Canada, is we actually assist the government, the authorities. In this case, the SPCA of Montreal was also involved because the puppy mill was located on their territory. We assist in removing the animals and then placing them in an emergency shelter.
So apart from the poor welfare conditions in these breeding facilities, there is the larger issues of why these facilities even exist and why breeding exists, and that is because there must be a demand for purchasing these animals. Can you talk about how the issue of supporting the dog breeding industry takes away homes from shelter animals who are otherwise put down if no one adopts them?
Yeah, and we often like to remind people that if tomorrow there will be no demand for puppy mills, if everybody was actually aware of this huge problem, puppy mills would shut down by themselves, because if profit is no longer there, there's no reason for these places to exist. So it's very important to carefully choose where you get your pet from. We always say that adoption should be the first option. You will have you adopting an animal is something that we will do only a few times in our lives, and so it's very important that the decision we make, the money that we're going to spend is going to, you know, either a shelter or a rescue group, or if you have to, well, an ethical breeder. It's very important not to fall under the pressure of seeing, you know, a cute puppy in a pet store and say, oh, I have to rescue him, because what you're doing, you're just contributing to the industry, right, and contributing to the problem. So if you are looking into adopting an animal, it's very important to choose carefully. And if you actually go and adopt an animal, not only are you certain that you're not contributing to the to puppy mills, you're actually saving a life, and you're also obviously making a space for another animal to be safe. There are really too many deserving animals that are being put down in our country to justify the production of new animals. We must concentrate our efforts on placing these animals, in my opinion, before making, like, quote, new ones. But the market is definitely saturated, especially here in Quebec. There are too many animals for the demand, so adopting is really the most responsible choice. And when people do not want to adopt for various reasons, they must be really, really careful in to which breeder they are buying from. It's very important, because no one actually buys from a puppy mill because they want to. It's always ignorance and not knowing the facts, basically.
One common reason that I hear from people as to why they want to purchase an animal is because they want a purebred puppy. Mm-hmm. But isn't it true that there are so many purebreds that are put in shelters?
Definitely. So any animals that you can find in a pet store, usually you can find in a shelter. There's a lot of abandonment also. Not only do people buy from puppy mills, but they abandon also animals. So anything that you can find in a pet store, you can actually find in a shelter. So maybe not the first time you visit, but you can go back and probably find that animal. They have waiting lists for specific breeds. There are rescue groups that are dedicated to specific breeds. Also, if you want a purebred puppy from a certain breed, you can look at these rescue groups. The website petfinder.com has all sorts of breeds and animals available for adoption, very easily to browse through and to find actually a pet that corresponds to the pet that you want. But I also like to remind people that animals in shelters, even if they're not purebred, can be great animals. There are misconceptions sometimes about purebred animals, so it's worth looking into shelters first, just to also
save an animal.
Save an animal, and also all the misconceptions we have sometimes about shelter animals being, difficult or having problems or being older. That's not true. There are tons of puppies and great animals just ready to be perfect pets in shelters.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Eva, to speak about the issues concerning puppy mills and about your work in rescuing dogs from these situations. To find out more about puppy mill issues and what you can do to support HSI's work against them, please visit the website hsi.org. Thanks, Eva. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
You are listening to the Animal Voices show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in the downtown east side, unceded Coast Salish territory. And so now I'm getting to some news stories. Actually, this one is really applicable to what we're just talking about. A store owner disagrees with the preventing of commercial pet sales. So in a federal complaint, the owner of a store called San Diego Puppy has attacked a citywide ban on the sale of dogs, cats, and rabbits at pet stores. David and Veronica Salanis, the owners of a pet store called Grantville, filed a lawsuit against the city, the local Humane Society, the San Diego Animal Defense Team, the Animal Protection and Rescue League, and the league's lawyer, Brian Peace, for their part in passing the Companion Animal Protection Ordinance on July 10th, 2013. The ordinance is aimed at closing puppy mills, commercial breeders often in the Midwest who have been found to ignore health requirements. But according to Salinas's complaint, there are already laws in place to protect against neglect and mistreatment by breeders. Adding to that, all dogs sold at San Diego Puppy come with a certificate of health. Quite interesting that this man is, or people are suing the animal rights and animal welfare groups.
Yeah, that is interesting. Actually, my Facebook friend, Brian Peace, who's the lawyer that you mentioned, he posted this on his Facebook, I think, a day or two ago, saying, yeah, bring it on, sue a lawyer, and it seems like they don't really have a chance. It's quite a silly thing that they're doing.
Well, we'll keep you updated if anything changes, but yeah, I don't think they have a chance either. Some other news. Fans convince Bare Naked Ladies to cancel their SeaWorld concert.
Yay.
I know.
This was in the news. We got this in our inbox actually days ago, saying that this is happening. Animal rights people are trying to get Bare Naked Ladies to boycott this concert, and then it happened.
Yeah, it's amazing what these online petitions can do. So it all began on Monday when a fan site associated with the band tweeted the news of an upcoming performance originally scheduled for February 15th. The tweet said, "Poor decision, motivated by money. Watch at Blackfish movie." And then canceled the show. The same day, Stewart acknowledged Padley's tweet. Stewart is from Bare Naked Ladies, and he said, "Like you, we've seen the movie and we're affected. We're currently looking at options on how to proceed." And so it's really interesting that they saw the movie, yet they were already obliged to it before. But anyways,
they just needed a little push, and they're canceling the show, right?
Yeah, they're canceling the show. And yeah, they had within a few days, they had over 9,000 signatures on change.org. And I saw on my Facebook, actually, a couple other people are performing at SeaWorld. So I saw a few other petitions coming through as well to get them to stop. So it's just amazing what the power of the people can do. So sign online petitions. It actually works.
Sometimes.
Yes, exactly. And then another big news that had come out is, they call them an animal rights group, but I think they're an animal welfare group, accused of Hollywood abuses. So the Hollywood Reporter lists alleged incidences on movies including Oscar-winning Life of Pi, Pirates of the Caribbean, and The Hobbit against American Humane Association, saying that they have not been protecting these animals and that these horrible acts of violence have happened or they've been in dangerous situations. So, for example, the lion in The Life of Pi alleged allegedly nearly drowned, and they had this email that they found from the AHA, so the American Humane Association, that said after this incident, this one take just went really bad and he got lost trying to swim to the side, wrote the monitor. Damn near drowned. I think this goes without saying, don't mention it to anyone, especially the office. So
there's been a lot of abuses that have been that this American Humane Association, is it? That they're being accused of letting happen. And
many animals have died as well. Yeah. So check that out.
Yeah. You know, animals and entertainment. That's something that I wanted to cover on the show. Maybe we'll do that one day. Thank you so much for that, Cynthia. For our feature interview today, we have animal activist Ashley Fruno on the show, who hails from Vancouver, but has been working for the animals in the Philippines for the last 7 years. As the PETA Asia Pacific Senior Campaigner. In her spare time, she has started the Pasai Pups Project to make a difference in the lives of dogs and cats in an impoverished area of Pasai City. She is here today to speak to us about the work she is doing in the Philippines, as well as to inform us about the situation with how the animals now in the aftermath of Typhoon Haiyan are doing in the Philippines. Hello, Ashley, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Thanks so much for having me on the show today.
Yes, and thank you for coming to talk to us about the work that you are doing in the Philippines for the animals. To start, though, I wanted to talk to you about the path that you have taken that has led you to where you are today, because you are actually originally here from Vancouver, and now you're in the Philippines. So how does one get from Vancouver to Manila? I know I first knew of you years ago as being the founder of our now very well-known local animal rights group here, called Liberation BC in Vancouver. Can you please tell us about how you started your activism locally here in Vancouver and how Liberation BC was formed?
Well, in short, I never imagined I'd end up in the Philippines, but that's where life took me, and I love it here now. I interned with PDUS in Norfolk, Virginia, 3 times throughout my university years in Vancouver, and I fell in love with the organization, and I truly believe in the same things and the same values that they do. I actually applied for a job with PDUS maybe in my 3rd year of university, and I couldn't actually work for them because I'm a Canadian citizen. It's very difficult for Canadians to get U.S. work visas. During this time in Vancouver, I had founded Liberation BC as just a local way for me to get active and do hands-on work to help the animal rights movement in Vancouver. And I was disappointed that I wouldn't be able to work for PDUS, but, you know, life goes on. And eventually, in short, I ended up with this offer to work in the Philippines, and I've been there ever since.
So you now work as the senior campaigner for PETA Asia Pacific. And as you were saying, you've been involved with PETA for a long time. Can you talk about maybe some of the highlights of the campaign work that you've done now with PETA Asia Pacific, and just highlights in the past or maybe campaigns that you're working on currently?
Sure. PETA Asia is a really small organization. We only have about 10 staff members, and we cover the entire Asia Pacific region. So we have our work cut out for us. One campaign that we're working on right now in the Philippines is our Free Mali campaign, which some people might have actually heard of because it's gotten pretty international in the past year or so. So we're working to have Mali, the elephant at the Manila Zoo, transferred to a sanctuary in Thailand. Basically, Mali has been confined to a barren concrete enclosure at the Manila Zoo for over 3 decades. She's been denied the companionship of other elephants, and she's obviously miserable, stressed out, and lonely. She's also been denied veterinary care, so she's suffering from some currently potentially fatal foot problems that urgently need to be treated. And because Mali is the only elephant in the entire country, so there's no other captive elephants in the Philippines, there are no elephant veterinarians here. So Mali needs to be sent elsewhere to be able to have her feet treated. So this is one campaign that we're currently spending a lot of time on. And it's not just about, you know, one elephant. It's not just about Mali, but it's about educating the public as a whole that if they care about animals, they should not support the zoo industry.
So that brings me to my next question, just about what it's like living in the Philippines with regards to how animals are treated there. You have the experience of living in North America and knowing what our views on animal rights issues are here. What is it like in the Philippines? What are the differences, would you say, with regards to how people treat the issue of the rights of animals there?
I think in any developing nation, there is a lot of stray animals. So anywhere you walk in the Philippines, you're going to come across stray cats and dogs. And that's one of the most obvious ways that people really see the mistreatment of animals. In countries like India or Thailand, where there's more of a religious emphasis on compassion to animals, the animals are generally treated a lot better, meaning that people do feed them, they call vets when they notice a sick animal. Generally, they're just kind to stray animals. Of course, that's not the situation everywhere. In the Philippines, unfortunately, I have found that it's quite different from Thailand and India in that regard, and that people just don't really interact with stray animals at all. It's very rare to see people feeding stray animals here. And if, you know, there's an injured or sick animal, people are sort of unlikely to take action. And because it's a developing country as well, people are struggling to provide for themselves and their families. So, of course, they can't necessarily be, you know, required to take action for animals who are suffering, because they are as well.
What would you say are the most pressing issues when it comes to domesticated animals that live among the people there? Is it to what you're talking about right now, the fact that people aren't taking care of animals that walk and live among them as well as they should be?
In terms of companion animals, the situation is very different than any other country that I've visited. One of the things that I've really noticed is that, you know, in Canada, I can just walk up to a dog and I'm fairly sure they're going to be friendly. Whereas in the Philippines, dogs are generally very scared of people, especially strangers, because they're just not used to kindness. So you have to take a much slower route with them. In terms of the most pressing issues, a lot of times stray animals are fed if they are, you know, protecting a house or they're living sort of amongst a family, but they wouldn't have proper veterinary care. They definitely wouldn't have access to spaying and neutering. So they keep reproducing, which is, you know, another problem in itself. And then simple conditions like mange, which is a skin infection, just completely go untreated.
What you're talking about here is the same kind of stuff that I encountered when I was traveling in India a couple of years ago, the same kind of issues. We actually visited an animal sanctuary where they were taking care of a lot of street dogs, and mange was actually a really big issue there, and it really needs to be treated. Let's talk about the Pasai Pups Project, because that's what we're leading into here. This is an initiative that you started 3 years ago to help dogs and cats who are living in an impoverished area in Pasai City. What are the lives like there for the people and their companion animals, and what prompted you to reach out to help them?
Essentially, the area is more or less what we would call impolitely as a slum, just to give people a better grasp on what's actually going on there. The people themselves often don't have access to proper bathrooms. Some of them don't have food every day. Their lives are very difficult. Obviously, it's extremely an overcrowded area. They don't always have proper electricity or running water. But what I found is that generally, as I've shown my interest in helping their animals, that people look on how their animals should be treated, which is something I'm really pleased with. And definitely in the past 3 years, there has been a huge improvement in the way that the animals are treated in the area.
So what kind of assistance are you seeing that the animals have needed? And like I asked before, like, how did you get to starting this project where you're going to this area and helping these animals out with all kinds of issues? I was reading on your Facebook page today. Maybe you can touch upon some of those as examples. What kinds of issues are you seeing that need some kind of intervention?
Sure. The basic things that we do are provide basic veterinary care, so dealing with really common illnesses that we see there, such as ehrlichia, which is a blood infection that's spread by ticks, mange, and parasite infestations. We also provide food for animals who are undernourished. So if there's an animal particularly skinny, we'll give them some food and then also talk with the owner. Making sure the guardians are providing fresh water to their animals, but it's something that just don't necessarily think about. And then setting a really good example to people by walking chain dogs or those dogs who are kept in cages. Most of the animals there are free roaming, so their lives, while not perfect, at least they do have their freedom. But there are some chained guard dogs there who people just don't necessarily realize need socialization as well. I actually started this project completely by accident. I often take interns at PETA to a nearby area called Tagaytay for day trips. And during one of my trips to a bus station there, I just sort of stumbled upon a couple of the dogs that lived in the area. And I fell in love with them and kept visiting them and providing them with, you know, flea and tick prevention and really basic care. And eventually what started out as just 3 dogs ended up being 12 dogs. And then before I knew it, it was about 200 dogs and cats that I was looking after.
Wow. So these 200 dogs and cats, would you say that they have guardians in the area there where they're staying, or are they mostly, as you were saying, free roaming? I'm trying to get an idea of when someone has a companion animal, do they allow them just to roam freely? Like, we don't do that here, you know, you take responsibility for your animal and usually keep your dog inside your house. But I was looking at pictures there of the area where they're living, and it's just a totally different environment than what we have here. You can't apply that same kind of logic. So I'm just sort of wondering, these 200 animals, do they have people who would say, you know, that dog is my family member and I'm going to take care of them? How does that work?
It's actually, the way I would describe the situation in the area that the Passai Pups Project works is just complete chaos. There's always dogs and cats and kids running around. The concept of ownership is a bit different here than in other countries. So people will say, that's my dog, but he might not necessarily stay in the house with them. He might not get food from them every day. He's running around the area, but he is theirs and he does know them and he does trust them. But again, the concept of ownership is just really different. And part of the reason that is because people have really small houses. A lot of the times there's barely room in the house for them and their family to sleep side by side on the floor. So of course they can't be expected to keep a dog confined to that house, nor would it really be an ideal situation for the dog either, if that makes sense.
Can you talk to us about how the local children have been involved with this project? And I understand you have a Christmas project coming up.
Yeah, the children are probably the most impacted by the work that we do, simply because children are always, I find, really keen to learn by example. So they see us walking the dogs, they see us petting and cuddling with the dogs, and they're keen to join in or to show us how much they love their dogs. So oftentimes they fight over who gets to help us walk the dogs when we're there. My dad recently visited the Philippines and assisted me one weekend in taking care of the dogs and the cats in the area. And he was really touched by the children. So he decided to donate a startup amount for us to start a Christmas project for the kids. So currently we're working on putting together Christmas packs for 250 children in the area, just giving them educational toys as well as a coloring book that features some of the Passai Pups themselves, fruit, little treats, pencils and crayons, and things that will just go a long way in making them have a good Christmas.
So up until now, you've been funding all of this care for the animals out of your own pocket, is that right? And I know you were doing some fundraising lately. Can you just talk about just the funds that are involved and where the money's been coming from?
For the first 3 years that I ran this project, or roughly, I guess, the first almost 3 years, I was funding it completely out of my own pocket. And when I started doing spaying and neutering on a larger scale, it was obviously sucking up more of my income that I could reasonably afford. And because of that, I am in quite a bit of debt, which is not something that I regret because every penny that I've spent on my credit card has been absolutely worth it. But recently we held an online fundraiser on Indiegogo.com, which generated about $5,000 and has allowed us to spay and neuter many more animals in the area. That money is almost actually run out with the animals that we've been able to spay. And of course, there are still more expenses every single month, like basic veterinary care, food, treats, toys, etc., that I'm still shouldering. So we do have a PayPal account set up on our Facebook page for anybody that wants to donate to allow us to keep spaying and neutering more and more animals.
And from what I understand, the money that people are donating to your project, it goes towards veterinary care specifically, and food supplies, things that are tangible. I mean, you're not getting paid. No one's getting paid a wage, right? So I just want people to sort of be clear, as if they wanted to donate to your project, exactly what it's paying for.
Yes, exactly. No one is getting, again, I am still shouldering most of the monthly expenses, like flea and tick treatment, toys, food, all of those are still on me. The donations that are being received through our PayPal account are simply for spaying and neutering and emergency veterinary care. Other than that, no one is getting paid. Certainly no one's making a profit from this project, and everyone who is involved is a volunteer.
So moving on, 3 weeks ago, one of the worst tropical storms ever to hit the Philippines, known as Typhoon Haiyan, wreaked havoc for both the people and the animals, and is now known as the deadliest natural catastrophe to happen in Philippine history. I understand that you were very lucky and the storm missed the exact area where you are, but I imagine that you've been immersed in the aftermath of what has been happening there since the storm hit, and perhaps you can shed some insight on the situation for us, for the animals there. But first of all, can you speak about the impact that the typhoon made in the environment that it hit?
Sure. Well, as you guys have probably seen on the news, the typhoon caused chaos wherever it went and devastated many towns in the Philippines, particularly in the Visayas region. Obviously, the environment that it hit was just completely devastated. Trees were torn down. Undoubtedly, many wild animals have lost their homes, and the situation for animals is obviously quite dire. Sadly, because the storm surge was so high, and for those who know what a storm surge is, it's essentially like a tsunami. It just is a giant wave of water that wipes out everything in its path. But for this storm, the storm surge was extremely high, so many animals simply perished in the floods. Photos from the disaster zones just show countless dog and cat bodies amongst human bodies all over the streets and under the rubble. It's an extremely tragic event, and one that a lot of people and animals are still suffering from.
As far as you know, were people taking their animals with them? Or I guess it's a mix of both. When you're faced with disaster and this urgent matter here, people perhaps don't have a plan in place of what they're going to do with their animals. And I know you had, the day that it was happening, you had posted on your Facebook page, people, please take your animals with you. But as it seems now, there's a lot of animals that are in need of rescue. So what has your experience from what you've been hearing been on that issue as to whether people were comfortable taking their animals with them? I don't know where they were being relocated to, if they were allowed to do so. What are your comments on that?
Unfortunately, with this storm, even the evacuation centers were really badly hit. So even if people did take their animals with them, the sad reality is that probably they didn't survive. Those animals who were caged or chained would certainly not have made it, because just, again, the storm surge was almost 5 meters, I believe, in some places, which is virtually unheard of for a storm in the Philippines before. People, my understanding is that people really didn't understand how big this storm would be. Some people who evacuated sort of just as a precaution. They didn't really believe that the storm would have the impact that it did. So sadly, many people probably did leave their animals at home and return to find them dead.
I guess you only know that that's going to happen once it happens, and then you're faced with reality. From what I understand now, there are major animal rescue organizations on site, such as Humane Society International and IFA. They're there rescuing animals still now, like 3 weeks after, and they are reuniting them with their families. Do you have any insights into how that is going, or have you been hearing about these animal rescues at all?
Yes, PETA is actually waiting to deploy our teams until we can find an area that other animal welfare organizations have not already targeted, because obviously within the animal rights movement here, we want to make sure we're not duplicating efforts. But in terms of other animal rights organizations, I know the HSI and IFAW and WISPA are all active in Cebu as well as Tacloban, which is the worst hit area. And HSI has a really good network of veterinarians here in the Philippines. So they've been able to set up a temporary shelter up there to house animals who have been abandoned. One of the major problems in Tacloban especially is that people are fleeing very eagerly. So via boats, bus, and C-130 cargo aircrafts that are run by the military, they're coming into Manila and Cebu and pretty much anywhere that they can go to avoid staying in Tacloban. And reports from on the ground are indicating that people are literally just abandoning their animals on the street moments before they evacuate. So rounding up those abandoned animals and making sure that they're not left on the streets to starve to death is obviously something that's going to be really important in the weeks following this disaster.
I guess what we can do here in Canada and North America, all we can do really is support these organizations with donations. Is that something that you would recommend as well?
Definitely. Donations are really badly needed. And of course, there are a lot of human aid organizations that are worth supporting as well, simply because people who are staying in the area who didn't evacuate and who still do have their companion animals with them, they will share their food and their rations and whatever they can with their animals. But if they don't have those resources themselves, then they certainly can't share them. So definitely it's also worth donating to the human relief organizations that are still active in the Philippines.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today, Ashley, to talk to us about your work in helping the dogs and other animals in the Philippines. To find out more about the Pasay Pups Project, please visit the Facebook page at facebook.com/PasayPupsPhilippines, and that's spelled P-A-S-A-Y Pups Philippines. Thanks for all the work you're doing, and take care.
Thank you as well.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices show on 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please join us next week, that's December 6th, for another great show. We here at Animal Voices modestly ask you to keep connected with us via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please do check out our website at animalvoices.org, where our shows can be downloaded from. We're closing the show with a song called Second Chance by Steve Gelman for all the dogs in the puppy mills and in the Philippines who are being given a second chance. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Second chance, you're giving me a second chance. Now I can feel the wind beneath my wings once again. And when no one else would care, or the others, they just stared. You took me in and you gave me a second chance. You see, once I soared high above the trees late at night, with only the moonlight to guide my way. Oh, but something went wrong and I was no longer strong. It looked like I was earthbound to stay. And I was covered in dry mud, I was weak, I was confused. I guess you could see I was quite a mess. And I had lost the sight from one of my eyes. Tell the truth, I feared for my life. But second chance, oh, you're giving me a second chance. I can feel the wind beneath my wings once again. When no one else would care, or the others, they just stare. You took me in and you gave me a second chance. Christmas Eve when I arrived,
your door. You reached out with loving hands and heart. And by the time the spring came, I'd regained all my strength. So you released me back into the night. And this is my thank you for all that you did and all that you give of yourself. To my sisters and my brothers of the night and of the wild, those whose lives you touch every day. We need a second chance, second chance. We all need a second chance to feel the wind beneath our wings once again. So whether you're an owl or a bear, maybe a human or a deer, all we really need is a second chance. Sometimes all we really need is that second chance.